XBTV is your source for all things winning,
for all things racing,
for all things handicap.
You're listening to the Backstretch Podcast, Zoe Cabman, alongside Jeff Siegel, right here at the Great Race Place. And Siegel, what a weekend it was. DQs, rising stars, records broken, two-year-olds running out of the screen, and looks like Abel Sadio had a coming-out party at Santa Anita Park.
And Johnny V actually had already been—he had already come out 25 years ago.
Exactly. You know?
But no, it was a great, great racing. Of course, Johnny V is setting a record for the most greatest stakes wins of any jockey. And Abel Sadio, oh, I used to ride a lot up in Northern California when I had horses at Golden Gate, and always thought he was a good rider. I didn't know whether he could crack this circuit, but he certainly has. Three major stakes wins over the weekend. That's out here at Santa Anita. Great racing at the Great Race Place. We'll have it again this weekend as well. But around the country, Zoe, last week in New York, coming up this week in New York, and of course Keeneland opening up as well, and then in France for the Arc on Sunday. We'll talk about that as well. It's a great time of the year, and it all funnels into the Breeders' Cup at the end of the month. And man, it's going to be very competitive this year. Lots of wide open races and a lot of favorites that might be a little vulnerable as well. So it was exciting.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the Breeders' Cup Classic Division. We saw the results from last week. What do we make of the results from this week? And we'll start here on the West Coast with the awesome again. McKinsey versus Mongolian Groom. It was basically like David and Goliath.
Right. And I looked at the form of Mongolian Groom going in. I looked at it coming out. I still can't figure out. Not so much that he didn't win, but he won so impressively. And he won like, he was so dominating here in a 110 buyer number. To give you an idea of what that is, his career top prior to that was only a 100, and he did that when he was a fifth in the Woodward. But basically, he's an exclaimer, as you know, and I didn't see this company. McKenzie was disappointing to me, Zoe. I don't know how you feel about it, but I thought he had every chance. The pace was moderate, and he just kind of was left for dead from the furlong pole to the wire. Higher Power had the same thing happen to him. The Maximum Security happened to him in the Pegasus. He stumbled badly against the start from an inside draw. I thought it got him out of his game plan, out of his rhythm. He was third. I think he can do better. But this was a shocker to me. 25-1 for Mongolian Groom. And now, Zoe, they have to figure out whether they want to go to the Breeders' Cup Classic because he is not nominated.
He's not. It'll cost $200,000 for him to start. He's a gelding. He's by Hightail, who actually took the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint when they still had that back at Santa Anita. Dwayne Lucas trained him. His dam, I think she broke a maiden for 30 at Kentucky Downs going a mile and 70. What do you do with him now? Enebish Gambat, a great ambassador for the sport. He wants to take him back to Asia. He's thinking Japan Cup with him. And why not? Why not take this gelding where the money is? Why spend the money and perhaps run third in the Breeders' Cup Classic?
Well, I tell you, the way he ran, I wouldn't put it past him that he could actually win it unless he's a one-hit wonder, because hadn't really done anything prior to this to indicate that he could run as well as he did. And he did run well. On the other hand, you got the Japan Cup Dirt, or the Japan Cup, or Japan Cup Dirt that he could run in. There are races next year. You got the Pegasus, you got the Dubai World Cup, you got that race in Saudi Arabia. So they may not feel like they need to put up $200,000 for a gelding. And I'd love to see him in the race. It'd be a great story. But if it was my money, I probably wouldn't do it. And yet, hey, same circumstance, same racetrack, same competition. Mile and a quarter wasn't going to get him beat, so I might be tempted to do it.
So what about McKinsey? He'll have to stretch out going a mile and a quarter. For me, it looked like he didn't handle the track all that well. Speaking to Bob this morning, he was perhaps a little bit bemused and thought perhaps he should have just gone on with it. They didn't go terribly fast up front over a tiring racetrack. 23 and change, 48 and 1,
right.
112, thinking that perhaps he should have just gone on with it. He said, I asked him if he was tired after the race, and he simply said no. He said he was a little bit wild, actually, wild in the test barn and mad more than anything. So I really don't know what to think. It looks like that'll be the logical place for him to go. Seeking the Soul will logically go there and see if he can plod along for a piece of it.
Right. Well, the thing about McKenzie is, number one, I've always believed that he would be suspect at a mile and a quarter. And he was really suspect at a mile and an eighth in this race, although we obviously know he can run that far because he won the Whitney at Saratoga prior to that. He was also beaten the nose in the Santa Anita handicap, so that was a mile and a quarter on this track. But the way he kind of waved the white flag in the last eighth of a mile, he got beat 2 1/4 lengths when he was like virtually head and head at the top of the stretch. It was disappointing. The other thing is, let's not forget, Mackenzie ran in the Breeders' Cup Classic last year at Churchill Downs, was 12th, beaten 31 lengths. Now
he's that was off a harder season, though.
I understand.
He's had an abbreviated season.
I understand that, which is why his most recent race, to me, was a little disappointing. Now, on the other hand, if you look at the Byard numbers, Mackenzie, on numbers, didn't run all that much worse, just a couple of points, really, than what he ran in the Whitney. So maybe he just flat-out got beat. But I would think that because it's a Baffert and because he's still in California, he'll probably be among if not the favorite, he won't be a short price favorite. And I think the gamblers will be looking to try to beat him, perhaps, based on his suspect ability to go a mile and a quarter. Higher power, I think, deserves another chance.
Absolutely.
I really don't think he had much of a chance. That bad stumble at the start, he was last early. He doesn't have to be that far back. And I think you're going to see him really train well, as he did prior to this race, and I think you're going to see a much better performance from him. So, we got the West Coast horses, but I think the East will be represented well as well.
Well, let's talk about the Grade 1 Jockey Cup. A lot of people looking for a matchup between Preservationist, who went off favored, Vino Rosso, and Code of Honor. Let's lead off with Preservationist before we really dive into this. What happened with him? He was favored. Were you surprised that he was favored?
A little bit. I was. I actually liked him in the Whitney, and I thought he got exposed that day. He came back and did win the Woodward. But he beat Bal Harbury on Yoshida. And Yoshida, you never can count on him. And, I didn't think that Preservationist, I thought he maybe had peaked. Now, his affinity for Belmont obviously was well documented. So I thought maybe he would be tough to beat. The horse that I liked, actually, was Code of Honor. Because I looked at Code of Honor's form, and he looked like he was getting better. A lightly raced 3-year-old. Shug's horses get better. And I thought Code of Honor was the one to beat. You know, Rosso, I wasn't really sure about him. Blinkers off, switching to Ortiz. A lot of controversy, though, with Vino Rosso actually finishing first and Code of Honor getting put up over a disqualification after some minor bumping. I guess when you get beat 3 inches, it's not minor, though.
Do you feel it was more so the bumping, or do you feel it was the two parts he carried out Code of Honor? Because if you get beat a nose, the bumping was a long way down the stretch.
Correct.
That was the bumping.
Yeah.
But you get beat a nose and you get carried out two paths.
Right.
Do you think that was the main cause of
concern? Yeah, it probably was. I was kind of hoping they would leave Code of Honor. Vino Rosso out, even though I actually like Code of Honor. Because I like to see horses that show the guts and the willingness to dig down deep and actually finish first, get rewarded for that, the bumping and the drifting notwithstanding. But it doesn't really surprise me that Code of Honor was put up, and now Code of Honor, hasn't he just about wrapped up champion 3-year-old honors?
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
I mean, that's particularly his form. I mean, he's got a win in the Fountain of Youth, a third in the Kentucky Derby, so he's classic placed. He won the
second
Dwyer.
Second in the Kentucky Derby.
Well, moved up, yeah, that's right. Then he was winner of the Dwyer, then he won the Travers. Now he beats older horses in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. I mean, I still think Maximum Security has got a right to think that maybe he's the better of the two, but you've got to go by resume. And that resume for Code of Honor is pretty darn impressive.
All right, so let me ask you this. Say he's got 3-year-old wrapped up.
Right.
Mineshaft. Mm-hmm. We're going to go a long way back to 2003.
Right.
He pretty much wrapped up Horse of the Year by winning the Jockey Club Gold Cup for Neil Howard and William Farish.
Right.
And they opted not to come to the Breeders' Cup Classic.
That's true.
Now, Shug, Mr. Farish, saying pretty much the same thing,
yeah,
that maybe they might not come. Now, it worked with Mineshaft. He wound up Horse of the Year in 2003, did not come and run in the Classic.
I know, but I don't think Code of Honor will be Horse of the Year. He'll be champion 3-year-old.
But I'm just saying that they have done this before, not brought their best horse.
If Code of Honor goes out and wins the Breeders' Cup Classic, and right now, Shug is not, he's not.
Okay, say he wins the Classic, if he comes.
Then he's probably Horse of the Year. But if he doesn't, he'll be champion 3-year-old, but he won't be Horse of the Year because I think Midnight Bisou will if she wins. She'll be a perfect 8-for-8, and why wouldn't she get the Horse of the Year? I think and I don't think anybody wants to reward a horse for not participating in the Breeders' Club when you're trying to run out the clock, so to speak. Now, Code of Honor, and that's not, another thing is he didn't finish first in this race. Now, he did end up winning it, yeah, but I don't think Code of Honor's resume would warrant Horse of the Year unless he were to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. And why wouldn't he be given that chance? He's truly a mile and a quarter horse. We know that. He just, he won the Travers, won the Jockey League Gold Cup. He's getting better with every start.
There's certainly nothing wrong with him.
No, why? He's not like he's been over-raced. I mean, he's only had 9 starts. why wouldn't you bring him out? And if, again, if you want to run the clock out and try to back in, maybe you do that, as they did with Mineshaft. But I'm not sure that's going to be plans. I think they'll run him, and I think if he does run, he might very well be favored.
What about Tacitus? What are we doing with Tacitus? Do we have to take him to Aqueduct to win a race?
Yeah, well, he won the Wood in April 6th. That's his last win.
So he could possibly come out here. Owendale took down the Oklahoma Derby. They can make a decision whether he goes in the Mile or the Classic. Elate in the Classic?
Elate,
to be a good Classic?
Yeah. Now, Elate is another possibility. We talked about her. She runs Sunday in the Spinster. I'm trying to figure out this Classic field, and we've already kind of thrown a little bit of cold water on the California-based horses. She wins the Spinster. Would you say that she'd have as good a chance of winning at a mile and a quarter, which is her trip, in the Breeders' Classic, as she would trying to beat Midnight Bisou at going a mile and an eighth in the Distaff?
She's already in the Distaff because she won the Fleur-de-Lis in June, which is the win you're in for the Distaff.
Right.
She can get in the Classic. I would love to see her run against the boys in the Classic.
Well, Zenyatta did on this racetrack.
Exactly.
You know, so. All right. Anyway, it's going to be interesting. And with all the major preps out of the way, now all we can do for the next month is sit and talk about it.
Well, let's talk about the female division. And Midnight Bisou remains undefeated in 2019 with an emphatic win in the Beldame. How does she compare to Paradise Woods, who romped in the Zenyatta?
Interesting question, and I'll tell you why. Because my first impression is there's no comparison, right? But Midnight Bisou earned a 91 buyer number. That's the second 91 in her last three races that she's earned, which is nothing wrong with that. But Paradise Woods was assigned a 98 buyer number when she returned to her best form, albeit with a perfect trip, in the Zenyatta Stakes here at Santa Anita on Sunday. And she did it the way, she did it well. You know, she showed the good tactical speed. She stalked the favorite Secret Spice, who had every opportunity. And she just went by her like she was standing still in the final furlong. Again, we know that Paradise Woods on her best day could be really, really good. Now, I thought her best day was like a couple years ago.
How about 2 years ago when she won the Zenyatta?
Right.
105 by a speed figure that day.
What do you think? Because you're closer to this filly than I am. I mean,
I'll say one thing. The job that Mandela did with her was fantastic.
Yeah.
The job that the Y Gods have done, having the wherewithal to keep her in training, for one, and run her as a five-year-old, anyone else would have already sent her to the breeding shed. And the job that John Sheriffs has done with her, getting her to relax in the morning, but also realizing that she needs to use her speed. It can't take her back. I asked him about the decision to put Abel Sadio on him, on her. Right. Mike Smith's been working her in the morning.
Right.
And it was all Mr. Wygod's decision. He wanted to put Abel on this horse and just let her roll.
Right.
And that's what they did with Mike's blessing. And that was a phenomenal performance. And she showed that she can rate and win, but she needs to rate close to the pace.
Right, absolutely. If she were to be able to duplicate that race in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, she might be able to give Midnight Bisou a run for her money. But Midnight Bisou has now won 7 out of 7 this year. She has won, and by the way, it's hard to remember that way back when she was a young filly, she was out here with Bill Spahr. Remember that?
Right.
And but
beat on debut.
Right. And you know, and she was always a good filly, but now she's close to unbeatable. And I'm for one who believe that if she were to come out here and win the Breeders' Cup Distaff, something that she has never done, she was third to Monomoy Girl last year. But if she can do that, why wouldn't she have credentials for Horse of the Year? The Horse of the Year can be a filly. We know that.
We know that for sure.
What's wrong with 8 for 8?
A perfect season. And Johnny V doing a fantastic job subbing for Mike Smith. Mm-hmm. Mike Smith will, of course, climb aboard Midnight Bisou, which is also part of the reason for the rider change on Paradise Woods.
Right.
Because you're not getting a commitment from Mike Smith to rider. Let Sadio get the hang of her. Let him ride her in the Classic.
Yeah. And there's the 3-year-olds aren't too shabby either. That's going to be a great race, you know. Dunbar Road, that group. I mean, what's wrong with that? So, I mean, I think that race is going to come up really salty, more intriguing than usual because there is a potential Horse of the Year award
makes
on the line.
Makes it exciting, doesn't it?
Really does.
All right, well, that was the Zenyatta Stakes. Yeah. Let's talk about Zenyatta for just a minute. She really hasn't been able to emulate herself, so to speak, but she hasn't been very lucky. She's had several foals. She's actually only had two make it to the races, 2012, 2013. A Warfront died in a paddock accident. She's been a very, very unlucky broodmare. But right. She does have one that just arrived to Santa
Anita. And you were able to see her.
Last week.
Medaglia d'Oro filly. If you have a Medaglia d'Oro in a filly, you've got to think that you got a shot, right?
Exactly.
Even though Zenyatta herself has never had a winner yet. And by the way, according to the official title, you are not a producer until you actually have a winner. So she's not a producer yet. She's had foals, but she's never had a winner. But now tell me about this filly. What is her name? Zelda?
Her name is Zelda with two L's. Yeah. She's been at Jeannie Maybury's farm training there. Right. Actually, it's a great YouTube page. You can look up all her training down there in Ocala at Jeannie's farm. And I think maybe to quote Mike Smith, he went and had a look at her and said, where's the rest of us? she's not very big. Yeah. And maybe that's a good thing because the other foals have been massive. Zyconic was enormous and he's going to be a fantastic show horse. She's not very big. She's stabled right there. She's got the same groom, Mario, who took care of Zenyatta. And we'll see what she does.
It would be kind of fun to see Zenyatta finally come up with a decent sort of filly. And, you know, the Medaglia d'Oro is a run. You'd think that you'd read Medaglia d'Oro as a Zenyatta, you'd get a big foal, right?
Right. Well, maybe this is good.
Maybe
this is a good sign for Zenyatta. So we'll look forward and we'll keep you posted
And she'll be here for... Now, how far along is she training-wise?
She's just galloping right
now. Okay, so she hasn't actually had a breeze
but
yet.
Anything that she does, we'll get it on XBTV.com.
Absolutely.
You mark your bottom dollar.
Exactly.
All right, let's talk two-year-olds. Last weekend at Santa Anita... Bob Baffert, Bast, and Eight Rings. Now, Eight Rings was, you know, he was good.
Yeah.
Let's start with Bast in the Phillies division, winning the Chandelier. What was your overall thoughts on that performance?
Well, she really had to work a little harder than I thought she would. After her runaway win in the Del Mar Debutante, she won that race by almost 9. And out of a mare by Arch by Uncle Mo, I thought she would just step up from that and just win by as many as she wanted to win by. But Comical, who obviously had prior success here at Santa Anita, she broke her maiden and beaten 9 lengths by Bast in the Del Mar Debutante, really made Bast work hard. And they didn't go fast. They went slow early, slow middle, and they didn't really finish out all that well either. 146 flat for a mile and a 16th is slow even on this deep track. The 81 Buyer number represented a 4-point drop. So while I give Bast credit for winning, she didn't produce the forward move that I thought, and that makes me believe that the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies is going to be an open event. I mean, there are a lot of nice fillies that are certain stages of development. And who knows? I think Bass is going to have to maybe step it up a little bit.
We'll get to her in a minute, but I think we might have seen a better one run earlier on that day.
So.
Okay, Eight Rings. Let's talk about him. I honestly believe the track was pretty tiring on Saturday, maybe a little bit more tiring than it was on Sunday. If you look at the times, you can compare them yourselves. Eight Rings looked like he was staggering the last 16th of a mile. Now, I don't know if he was just green a little bit, but he was switching leads and just getting very late. Even though he won.
They ran the last 16th in 7 1/5. So that's staggering, even on this track.
Right.
And yet he was drawing away. Everybody else was, the others weren't staggering. They were like coming to a walk. They were like literally stopped. American Theorem coming off that maiden win held on for second. Nobody made up any ground. Very deep and tiring track. Eight Rings.
I thought Storm the Court actually made up some ground.
Yeah, but he still got beat 8 lengths.
Right.
I mean, he was kind of grinding it out. But the bottom line is that Eight Rings showed improved, well, I don't know if improved early speed, but he showed speed with the blinkers on. He won by 6. It was a good effort. He's clearly better than anything we have out here in California. But there are some good two-year-olds back east as well. And this week coming up, Greenlight Go, I guess he's going to run in the... Champagne. You've got this really promising Todd Pletcher colt, Governor Morris.
He's a good colt.
He's going to run, and he should win the Breeders' Futurity at Kalen. Dennis's Moment has done, you know, other than drop his rider in his first start, since then he's been untouchable.
You got a feel for Robbie Alvarado because he hasn't been able to get back on.
Right. But so I think that division, although I do think that Eight Rings is the best that we have, he's going to have some tough competition. That Breeders' Cup Juvenile looks really good this year.
It certainly does. Okay, let's talk about the Breeders' Cup Sprint Division. And all eyes were on the East Coast when we got to see Imperial Hint and Firenze Fire go head-to-head in the Vosburgh. And what a fantastic finish that was.
I mean, I thought Imperial Hint was beat. I mean,
he was beaten. Yeah, and I mean, you know what happened? Ortiz pulled Firenze Fire down to the rail to squeeze him a little bit, which is what you're supposed to do. Yeah. But I think they may have underestimated what a fighter Imperial Hint is, because when he got squeezed on the rail, he said, he might have gone right by him if he'd have stayed in the middle of the racetrack.
He might have.
But he came down and engaged him, and that little horse just refused to get beaten.
You know, you think about what I didn't think in the terms that you just, as an ex-rider, you would think that. But maybe you're right.
That
maybe
engaged him.
Maybe
for
he would
sure.
be better off if he didn't really sense his being and he could have gone on by. Anyway, Imperial Hint comes back, wins the race by a nose, almost 10 back to the third horse. Firenze Fire gets beat a nose. The 103 buyer number that Imperial Hint earned represented an 11-point drop off his amazing win in the Vanderbilt, which no one ever thought he would come back and run back that good. But now Imperial Hint, I won't say he's vulnerable, but I mean, he's going to come out here. I would imagine Firenze Fire might as well. And here at Santa Anita this Saturday, we have a really, really good sprint as well, a prep locally here, the feature race on Saturday, Santa Anita Sprint Championship. And I'm thinking, you know, we got Chancelot. We know how good he might be, even though he got beat last time out when he got nosed out. But he still ran very well and probably is the one to beat. Got beat ahead in the Jerkins at 30 cents in the dollar, perhaps bias-aided. And that was going 7/8. He's back to go 3/4. And then Omaha Beach. And aren't we excited to see him come back? And who knows, though, is he a sprinter? Has he always wanted to be a sprinter? He's certainly training like he wants to be a sprinter.
I'll tell you what. And you can go to the website and watch both the work. Chancelot has been out here training. He had to work over the main track, 47-1, a good work for him. Nothing wrong with that. But Omaha Beach, I watched it in person, and I've watched it over and over again on XBTV. His work was absolutely scintillating. Mike Smith just letting him rumble, letting him do his thing. He passed four or five horses in the stretch and finished up with his ears pricked in 46-3. That, for me, is the work of the month here at Santa Anita.
Fastest of 32 for a colt by Warfront.
No one was even close to that time.
I know, and if you look at his form, this is a horse that has run seven times, six routes, and the only time he ever sprinted in his life was when he broke his maiden. He did that over a sloppy track in 121 flat. He won by 9 that day. And I'm not saying that he can't route, because he obviously can. He won the Rebel. He won the Arkansas Derby at 1 1/8. But is there a possibility that Omaha Beach is even a better sprinter than he is a distance horse, based on his only win sprinting and that recent blowout 46 and change workout?
They're going to want him to have an outside draw, I would imagine, because, you know, with his recent well-documented throat issues, you don't really want to have to take a hold of him. Mm-hmm. And that's going to help him in these one-turn races.
Okay, you're right. You're riding Omaha Beach. What do you do with Chancelot? You let him go and try to catch him? Oh. You try to stay close to him? What do you do?
You let Omaha Beach do his thing.
Okay.
Wherever he's comfortable, you keep him in the clear and just let him do his thing. You don't send him. You don't pull him back. If you're outside, you're in the clear, and you just do your thing. Let Chancelot go and engage him when you can.
We will be missing the defending champion, two-time defending champion. Roy H. will not make the race. Peter Miller making that announcement, although he says he's not retired. He just needs more time.
Is he 8?
He's old.
He's a gelding.
He's a gelding, yes.
Been good to them.
Oh, yeah. So no Roy H. in this year's Breeders' Cup. But again, on Saturday here at Santa Anita, fantastic race. Omaha Beach making his comeback. Was my pick to win the Kentucky Derby, by the way, until such time as he had to get scratched the week of the Derby. And then the brilliantly fast Chancelot backing up to 6 furlongs. Clearly the speed of the speed, and obviously fast on his best day, fast enough to win a race like this. So an outstanding race this Saturday, and with tremendous Breeders' Cup implications.
All right, so we had a good weekend of two-year-olds in stakes. I think we saw some future stars. We certainly got about 6 TDN rising stars throughout the weekend, especially out here in Southern California. Donna Valace, fast woman in Italian, and she is just that.
All right. You know, Simon Callahan's got her for Kaleem Shaw. Now, Kaleem likes to dance the big dances. He's in it to win the biggies. And you've got a filly like this. Certainly bred to stay a middle distance, at least, being by Uncle Mo and out of him by Monju. She wins her first start here at Santa Anita, September 28th. She wins by 9 1/4. She's a length on top at the top of the stretch with her ears up, just kind of galloping along. Flavia kind of chirps to her just to open up. She switches leads like she's done it all her life. She opens up at will, wins with her ears pricked. She runs 6.5 and 16 1/5, and she wins she earns a 91 by her speed figure. Again, 10 points better than what Bast earns. Do you take that leap now from a maiden win? Assuming you can get into the race. Take the leap from a maiden sprint win to a Breeders' Cup Grade 1 two-turn event.
Hell yes, you do. Come on, she's the heir apparent to Bellafina. Have you seen her in person? She looks like a 3-year-old colt. Mm-hmm. She is amazing. They bought her at the Fazzing Tipton March sale, paid $800,000, much like they did with Bellafina. Mm-hmm. She's the heir apparent to Bellafina. You just got to hope she stays sound, healthy, doesn't get sick. She was absolutely fantastic.
Here's the deal by doing this. What are you gambling? Well, you're gambling the fact that...
What have you got to lose?
Well, you're right about that. But on the other hand, if you win, you are a Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, filly winner. You're a Grade 1 winner, and you're probably the champion 2-year-old filly.
Absolutely.
You go for it, don't you?
They've got nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Okay.
So that's Donna Veloce, Princess Carolina... $11, are you kidding me?
You know,
American Pharoah, a half to champion Lady Eli. I watched the works. I actually had a couple dollars on her.
Right.
Are you kidding me? $11? That alone, Chad Brown, should get you in the winner's circle.
Here's the funny thing about Princessa Caroline. Now, this is, as you mentioned, half to Lady Eli. And yet, in all of her workouts, not once did Chad work her on the turf.
Because she works well on the dirt. She's by American Pharoah.
I understand,
she can
she wants. I understand. I'm just surprised that he did it, because if he had every intention to run her on the grass,
looking to get a prize. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Race at
anyway,
Ballon
so
Park.
Now, again, okay, she's now a maiden winner. Do you come back and try to get in, although it might be difficult, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf?
He's got a few. I mean, Chad is an embarrassment of riches there. So, I mean, why not? I mean, look at the ownership group on her. These are guys that really want to.
Won't that race have like 35 pre-entries in it or something?
It will. So, I mean, you see where you can go. There's always the undercard races for the two-year-olds on the turf. Whichever way you look at it, she was fantastic. We had Canderelle out here for Hall of Famer Dick Mandela. Mm-hmm. He won like a good thing on the grass as well on Saturday.
Sure. All right, so we've got... And by the way, this week's Black Book segment, which we'll be taping Thursday... we are going to look back at some of the terrific debut performances from last week, not just here in California, but in New York, and there were a few others around the country as well. Even one at Golden Gate will show you if you missed that one. So we'll have Black Books this week on xbtv.com, and I think Thursday we'll get around to doing that.
Talking of Thursday, Santa Anita resumes on Thursday. We do have a single pick six jackpot going into Thursday's card. Races 2 from 7. As always, it's free admission and free parking on Thursdays and Friday. If you come on Friday, you can get a $2 beer and a $6 cocktail. Those cocktails are good, Jeff Siegel. You'd only need one.
Well, I will. You are an expert when it comes to those kind of things. So I'll take your word for it. But no, great racing coming up here at Santa Anita. Get out. We got a great couple of good days of racing Saturday and Sunday. It's opening up on Thursday. But I can't wait for that Santa Anita Sprint Championship. And that is going to be a humdinger of a sprint. And good gambling around. We are going to have some fun. But before we sign off, I know, Zoe, you know the Euros better than I do. There's a pretty decent race on Sunday.
We'll be here early on Sunday morning to watch the Arc. Arc de Triomphe from a parish Longchamp goes as race number 4. And it seems like it's such a walkover. They took it early. But it is actually a field of 12 signed up here. French King, Waldegeist, Gaither, goodness me, I'm not going to name all of them, but Enable draws post position number 8, Magical to her outside Japan, Anthony Van Dyke, and Skosas.
This is probably going to be her last start, you think? They wouldn't be tempted to come out here in California for a swan song?
I doubt it. I don't know. I don't know, but it would be phenomenal. But she's got to win the Arc first. And coming into it, watching all her gallops in Newmarket, she couldn't look any better.
No.
I mean, what a fantastic
trying
job
to become the first horse ever to win 3 in a row. And I will say this. I hope she does it. And I hope they decide to bring her out here and give us one more treat. Let's face it. I mean, we don't have anything in the States that can warm her up. Her toughest race is going to be in the Arc. And she comes out here and she could probably 2-minute lick and win. So bring her out after she wins the ARC, and she will win the ARC.
Viva Enable and Viva This Weekend. Thanks so much for joining us on the Backstretch Podcast. For Jeff Siegel, I'm Zoe Kaplan. We'll see you next week.